Hi, this is Todd Agassawan. This is Mobile News Podcast 379. John Westfall isn't available this week, and so I was really fortunate to have my old friend, our mutual old friend, really, Jason Dunn, join me to co-host this podcast. But something really weird happened during the recording. Only Jason's voice was recorded. I don't know why. I've used the same Audio Hijack template hundreds of times. We have to use Skype this time, unlike Teams, which we're using for the last, 10 or 12 podcasts. But I've used that template hundreds of times. In any case, you'll only hear Jason. But you know what? It's okay because Jason's so well-spoken. I think you can kind of guess what I said on my side. Talk to you later.
Hello, Todd. Happy to be here. Wow. A few things have changed since then in the world, haven't they? Oh, my goodness. The swanky Windows Phone 7 is going to change the world, Todd. It's a contender. Yeah, no, you're right. Microsoft made a really big bet, right, with that hard reboot. I think they were looking at their directions of things, and they realized that, this reference might not even work, but they sort of built a Yugo in Windows 6X. You know, it was functional. It was utilitarian. But it wasn't up to the standards of, you know, a NASCAR vehicle on the track, which is, you know, what they were competing with Android and, iOS. And so they definitely made a big bet with the full reboot. Is it really? Wow. Now that makes me feel old, Todd. That makes me feel ancient. 25 years. No, I would have been in my early 20s, though. And I definitely felt like a teenager. Compared to all you wizened gentlemen that I was with as an MVP in the early years. Indeed. In 25 years, a lot of things changed. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. No, I'm still using Windows, Windows CE, my Philips Velo 1. It's aged beautifully, Todd. It's aged beautifully. I mean, I have to connect it over dial-up, you know, at a 56K modem, which is a little awkward for doing email with pictures, but... it works great. you're right. Certainly a lot has changed. And I think it would be, I would love to know if there are any human beings on the planet, you know, still using a Windows phone. But what is funny, right, is that, you know, people like us are comfortable with changing technology and we're comfortable trying out new things. Regular people, though, the bulk of the, you know, bulk of the populace, you know, is not at that front end of the curve. They're in, you know, the big part of the curve. And some of them are in the, you know, the laggards, right? They're on the other end of the curve. I want to say even 2 years ago, a woman at my wife's school, like at the school that my daughter goes to, she was using a Windows phone. And I hadn't seen one in the wild in quite a while. And I was like, oh, wow, look at that. You're still using a Windows phone. So for some people, as long as it does what they needed to do, they'll use it until it no longer meets their needs. And for a lot of us, we just, you know, we have a hard time comprehending that. But, you know, for regular people, some of that technology keeps kicking. You know, when you've got a market share that is a rounding error, you can definitely have that small attack vector where nobody's writing malware for Windows Phone. Yeah, it's probably the most secure probably even more secure than BlackBerries, right? I'm sure there's probably more BlackBerries kicking around in Windows phones. You know, it's funny. Right now I'm watching Halt and Catch Fire, the TV show, which is probably worth another conversation. So I was going to tell you I'm using some, you know, Commodore 64 based OS open source phone or something, but no. I am in fact using my Pixel 3. Interestingly, it is the longest I've ever owned a phone before, you know, without switching. So I got it in. When did the Pixel 3 come out? I think it was 2018. Like, I want to say this is like my third year of using the Pixel 3. Yeah, sorry. I guess that makes sense, right? Because Google really, you know, the Pixel 6 is coming up. So yeah, so it's 3 years old. They release one each year. And I guess this is just one of those interesting things where with my phone, especially the past 2 years, right? You've been largely based at home. You don't necessarily need a phone that has, you know, really long battery life or, you know, some of these other things that a more modern phone has. So for me, it's met my needs fine. Now this year, I am definitely upgrading. And what was interesting is that for the first time ever, I was in fact considering going with a new iPhone 13 or a Pixel 6. Like, I was going to go one or the other. There was really nothing else in contention. And interestingly enough, when Apple came out with yet another lightning port based phone, I was like, forget it. forget, screw you, Apple. No, I'm not going backwards in time. You know, I have nothing in my house that charges regularly over Lightning. You know, I have, you know, the Magic keyboard and the trackpad. You know, tech, you know, they use Lightning, but you can use them for months on end without needing to recharge them, really. And we got rid of the last iPad mini that had Lightning, so it's just USB-C. If Apple would have done USB-C, there would have been a very serious thought in my mind about maybe switching, but they didn't. And I'm like, nope, forget you. I'm not going backwards. So unless the Pixel 6 comes out and it's just a real problematic phone, odds are very high I'm going to be switching to that in a couple of months. Yeah, I want to say it's October 18th or 19th. I think it's on the 19th, actually. Yeah, because Apple has their event tomorrow, which we're expecting new MacBooks. And then, yes, the Google event is the day after. So, yes, I expect to do it. But here's what else is interesting, right? Google has now trained me to not buy their phone until their Black Friday sales, because I know for sure it's going to be less. So I'm just going to wait like 4 weeks and then save some money. So Google is kind of Osborning themselves in a way. You know, it's like, no, don't buy our phone at launch, because we're going to offer you a discount in only 4 weeks. So it's a weird strategy they have. But, you know, this is Google with Pixel phones, right? Weird strategies is what they do, like leaking the whole product, you know, months in advance. Exactly. Although it is interesting, right? They don't do sales, but they've loosened the reins on their partners, right? Where you actually see discounts or, you know, in-store rebates or all kinds of interesting things from Apple partners. So that has changed a little bit, but yeah, they're definitely not a discount, you know, fire sale kind of company. Yeah. Yeah. The batteries died. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Amazon giving you deals every day. That's right. Because it saves you some money, right? Yeah, it's funny. No, you're right. I would actually never, in fact, I never go to Apple first to buy things, you know, if I have the option. In fact, this is a little, you know, kind of inside baseball, but when I'm looking to purchase my latest Apple product, I do it from one place, and that is B&H Photos in New York, because they have, you know, really good selection. They get stuff in really fast, but more importantly, they have this credit card. It's called PayBu. I don't know who names these things. It's called PayBu, and it gives you an instant sales tax rebate. You know, so the sales tax where I am is 10%. So when you order it, they just give you an instant rebate for the sales tax. So that saves me $80, $100, $120, you know, depending on what I'm purchasing. So for me, it's always worth buying from B&H and really never from Apple. Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting twist. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, and that's the interesting thing about, you know, Google and Pixels, right, is Google does, and, you know, this is obviously one of the founding reasons for the Pixel, is they do the software the way they wish all Android manufacturers, you know, did the software, right? Regular updates, you know, timely security updates. And you get the new operating system like quite quickly because, hey, well, it's from Google, you know. So this is, and what's interesting, right, with the new Pixel 6, with their Tensor, I think it's called the Tensor CPU, right? Their SoC that they're putting in the phone, they're really going the Apple route, you know, by putting in their own silicon in the product, you know, so they control more of the hardware stack. Obviously, they control the entire software stack. So while I doubt the Pixel is ever going to be, you know, a big slice of Android, certainly if you like Android and you want that experience and you want, you know, several years of updates and you want timely updates, the Pixel's kind of the only game in town from that perspective on Android. Yeah, that was an HTC phone. Yeah. Yes. I spent almost 3 years working for HTC. It was a delightful time of my life. I really enjoyed working for that company. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, well, you know, and taking back, you know, with the 25th year, you know, anniversary, right? There's no company that contributed more to, you know, from like a hardware perspective and even software, right? With, you know, early Windows C products, right? Then HTC, right? And then they went from being a white label ODM that no one had ever heard from, making just some crazy device. I still miss some of those beautiful devices, you know, the fold out, flip out, you know, keyboard. And there was so much that it was like that golden age of innovation from a hardware and a software perspective, right? Things were changing so fast. And users back then, like us, you know, and let's face it, right? It was users like us, right? We were the bulk of the population was not purchasing these crazy new pocket computer phones. It was the weirdos like us at the edge of the curve, you know, the early adopters. We were willing to try any new form factor, flip out, turn around keyboard, slide out keyboard, like mini laptop, whatever. We'll give it a try. It's cool. It's fun. Yeah. Yeah. But you know, what's interesting though, too, and I'd love to get your take on this, is we're seeing, you know, finally, right, after years of just slabs of glass, which really, you know, there's some people that complain about it, but I'm like, look, you know, there's a reason why we're still driving around on round tires, right? Once you perfect a form factor, like there's no innovation in tires, right? Nobody's coming up with a square tire and trying to tell us, you know, or an octagonal tire, this is the tire of the future. It's round. Physics tells us it's perfect. And to a certain extent, right, you know, the slab of glass in our hands, that is just the perfect form factor for the current, you know, technology that we have. And so I don't begrudge any new manufacturer for just making another new slab of glass. Like, this is what it is. But here's what's interesting. I'd love to get your take. The folding smartphones, I have not. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all the folding smartphones, I have exactly zero interest currently in a folding smartphone. And I wonder, I don't know if it's just my age, you know, if I was in, you know, in my 20s and I'd be like, you know, oh, innovation, I'm willing to go and drop, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 on this. I was certainly that way, you know, 20 years ago with all the, like, I remember getting my Philips Velo 1 and had to import it into Canada. And after taxes and duty, it was like $1,500 Canadian to get this Philips Velo 1. And this is in the 90s where $1,500 was like, it was like 10,000 modern dollars. It was a lot of money. I'm kidding. But anyway, there's that innovation in folding phones. And I don't know about you, and I'll get your take. I don't feel that pull towards the cutting edge, super expensive form factors. I'm just like, no, give me my slab of glass. So where are you at with that? Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ah, there you go. Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a real enthusiast, aren't you? Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. That's right. I never went full Scotty vest, though. You know, in full disclosure, I was never that guy. You know, I know you and John weren't. If John were here, he would tell us the 52 things he fit in his Scotty vest. But yeah, I never quite went that far. And to be fair, I was never Batman. I never did the belt clip kind of holster thing. And maybe, you know, and again, this is maybe we get into the where we were in our lives. You know, so I was in my 20s. I'm like, I'm not some old man strapping a phone to my belt, you know. But yeah, exactly. Right. Yep. Yes. But you know, getting back to that whole you know, the folding phones for a second. So I, you know, it's interesting, right? So I think, you know, different people, you know, you move to different parts of the curve, right? So certainly, and I think it has to do with age, and it's also just that just disposable income, right? So for me right now, you know, like you said, if I had $2,000 burning a hole in my pocket, I'd be like, oh, no, I'm going to put that into, you know, a market investment account and, you know, earn some money and prepare for retirement. Like, you know, we think of different things, you know, as we age. I'm certainly intrigued by the notion of having, you know, a fold-out screen, having more screen real estate. But even on my phone, right, you know, the Pixel 3 is a dainty, tiny phone in terms of screen size. I initially got the XL. And I returned it because it was gigantic. I was like, no, this is ridiculous. This is too big. But my wife has a OnePlus 8 Pro that I got her last year. And it has like a massive screen and she just loves it, right? But what's interesting is that is her primary computing device. So having a bigger screen, that is her everything. In fact, I quite jokingly refer to, she is the cutting edge mobile user in our house. She's the one that's like printing off her phone and doing all the, you know, doing PDFs and all this other stuff. I'm like the mobile laggard, which is a, you know, a funny admission to make, but I'm very much I have very, very narrow use cases, you know, for my Pixel 3. And so she needed the bigger one. And maybe that's why the pull of kind of the folding screens, it's intriguing at a geeky intellectual level, but I'm no longer the early adopter I was, you know, back in the mobile day. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. But there's also, oh, did he? Of course. Well, there you go. Yeah. See, so there's a guy who's still at that high. He's still at the early adoption, right? He's doing it. But yeah, and again, maybe 10 years from now, when I'm not, you know, I don't know, no longer saving for my retirement, I'm kind of there. Then maybe that switch for the, you know, disposable income flips back over, and you're like, I'm going to be dead in 20 years. I can spend all the money I want now. You know, maybe that switch flips or something. Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought the first time we met was at an MVP summit. When Derek Brown brought us all in, because I feel like that was the first time we met in person. I don't think it was at a big event. Yeah. Well, here's why I'm pretty sure it was at Microsoft, because in my early 20s, I wouldn't have really had the money to just fly down to the U.S. and spend for everything. So I'm pretty sure it was on Microsoft's dime. I'm very confident about that. I do remember some of those. Yeah. But see, I feel like that was a titch later, because some of those things, I was actually like working at them. Like I remember, because I was like a vendor. So, you know, this is back in like the Pocket PC days, you know, and I was a vendor for Microsoft. And I remember actually working at some of those things. And there was maybe one that like I had volunteered for, but I still think Microsoft brought us there. But yeah, back in the day, we have. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Windows CE brought us together, Todd. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have happened. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, you're living on a tropical paradise island, right? I never would have been out there. Well, this is true. Yeah. Yeah. We're actually coming up in my 10 years in the United States when I moved from Canada, which is, it's a crazy milestone in and of itself when I think about it. Like, wow, 10 years. You know, I remember for the first 5 or 6 years, people in Canada, family and friends would be like, so are you moving back? Like, are you staying there? And I was like, I don't know. I have work here. I have a job, and you know, kids are now in school, and so yeah, it's been a crazy 10 years though, for sure. Yeah, yeah. So it was the Philips Velo 1, which is kind of funny, right? When you think about Philips now, because in terms of technology, other than making the you know, the light bulbs, the Hue light bulbs, does Philips do anything in technology now? I you don't think of them, right, as being that space. But yeah, so it was a Philips Velo 1. And I remember, you know, I had the Philips, in fact, this is one of those weird quirks of my own life. My friend called me like the master of archiving, or the master archivist or something, because I still have, you know, my Philips Velo 1 FAQ online. You know, like it's still linked off my jasondunn.com as an archive site. So for whatever reason, I'm still keeping up web pages from 1996. You know, because I'm like, I don't want it to go away. Why would you make it go away? It's cool. It's history. So I'm kind of my own, internetarchive.org. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yes. 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 Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm. I have too many. Okay. That's interesting. So I think that's one of those things where early on, right, where Microsoft was really looking for all kinds of partners, to make Windows CE devices. Because like you think back to some of those early companies, you know, so you had, you know, Philips and, I mean, Everex. Like, who'd ever heard of Everex? I had never heard of it before, right? But here's what's funny. I'm going to bring this around to that TV show I'm watching, Halt and Catch Fire, you know, which is set, you know, so it's set, you know, 15 years, 18 years before what we're talking about. But back, you know, in the you know, late 70s, early 80s, where everyone was rushing to be like a clone PC manufacturer. You just had all these weird companies that were making hardware that had never really done it before. And all these companies that's like, wait, like you make a computer? You know, yeah. You know, again, I don't know, you know, the listed companies, but basically everyone was getting into it because they didn't want to miss the next big thing. And I think in that, you know, kind of 97, 98 era, I think you had some companies like Philips, like Everex, and, you know, Casio and HP, and obviously HP, yeah, NEC, who were, I think, very much like, okay, this might be the next big thing. So we're going to get on board and start making these things. Because, you know, obviously Microsoft's big pitch was this is the next computing revolution. And they were right. They were just a decade too early, which is very typical of Microsoft. You know, there's that vision, but the timing is always off. And I don't fault them for it. I mean, somebody has to go first. And I think that's probably my biggest criticism that I still level against Apple is Apple never goes first. They're followers, and they wait, and they're patient, and they wait for the technology, they wait for the experience. But Microsoft is like, no, we're going to do it now. And they usually crash and burn. But damn it, I appreciate their, you know, their chutzpah. And somebody's got to be the innovator, right? Somebody has to go first. And in the late 90s, that was Microsoft with Windows CE early on. Although I will say, just in case somebody's already, you know, tweeting at me with this comment, definitely Apple, you know, with like the Macintosh and the GUI-based OS, that was absolutely pioneering and visionary at the time, right? So Apple absolutely did some great work there. Like you said, though, it was based off of Xerox PARC and a lot of these other you know, technologies, but I will give them full credit for that. But a lot of other technologies, tablets and phones, I mean, really everything related to mobility, they bided their time and they waited until the technology was ready to give consumers the experience that Apple wanted them to have. Whereas, you know, the Microsoft approach, as we've lived through, is the let a thousand flowers bloom. You know, anyone who wants to make one of these devices, make a device. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it only has 90 minutes of battery life. Damn it, it's cool. And we're going to sell 50,000 of them. And then we're going to go out of business, probably. We're going to pivot to something else. But yeah, lots of innovation. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's a perfect example, right? Yeah, absolutely. You know, people that think that Apple invented the iPad, you know, the tablet market with the iPad. No, of course they didn't, right? Microsoft and you know, tons of manufacturers had already done that. But again, you know, hot, heavy, terrible battery life. You know, I mean, everything, you know, the CPUs from Intel, they were never meant to go in a small, thin form factor device. I mean, you know, this is, you know, the equivalent of like somebody taking, you know, a jet from a 747 and attaching it to a hang glider and saying, you know, we've reinvented personal flight, you know, and it's just completely the wrong solution. But I always had the deepest respect for the innovators, the people that are going first, that start to prime the market so that when something like the iPad comes out, and, you know, I think this is only ever rumors, but I think they're pretty well founded at this point, right? But the iPad existed before the iPhone, like in prototype. And Apple had been working on a tablet, but it just wasn't ready. And so they had the patience, and let's face it, the financial muscle to sit there and wait until the technology was ready so that they could actually deliver for the time a thin and light, long-lasting battery, you know, device that no one else could. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Yes. Yep. Right. Yeah. Because you're right. So the, you know, the Microsoft of the 90s, and really, let's face it, right? Up until Satya came in, the Microsoft of the, you know, the 90s and the aughts, right, they were entirely focused on Windows and Office. These were the sacred cows, right, of their money, and absolutely everything had to be subservient to these two pillars. And for whatever reason, well, you know, we know, right? Because it was Ballmer, and, you know, he just thought that the future was going to be one thing, and Satya saw the cloud coming and device agnosticism, where Microsoft was the software layer. And yeah, you know, it just completely transformed Microsoft's approach. Yeah, no, so the Philips Vila 1, that was a handheld PC. Yeah, no. So I was there from the beginning. Yeah. So I had the Philips Vila 1, the Vila 500. You know, early on, I mean, like when I think about the technology that Philips was able to put in this little device, it was kind of stunning. Like when you really stop and think about where mobile technology was. I mean, Todd, I remember being in college with my, and this is comical when you think about it, because the Philips Vila 1 was a very small device. I was taking notes in class on this little tiny chiclet keyboard, and all of my college classmates were like, who are you and what are you doing? And I'm like, this is the future. I'm typing on this tiny mobile device. And, you know, It was stunning. And then they added like I think the Velo 500 was when they added in the 56K modem, and like I could get online and check my email. And I mean, I was just living the future back then. Well, everyone else, a pager was the most exciting device, right? Most people had back then. It's just fascinating how much innovation occurred in that. Really, it was about 10 years, right? Where you just saw a ton of innovation in mobility. Yes, that was a fantastic device. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Right. Yeah, it's funny, right? And it's also funny how everything kind of comes back around again, right? So we had, if you look at early, you'd have to really give credit to like the Trio, right? Wasn't the Trio, like the Palm Trio, the first thing that had a keyboard? Like, I feel like that was kind of one of the earliest devices, or I could be getting my timelines mixed up, but you had, things like, the Trio. Yeah. Oh yeah. Maybe it was the BlackBerry. Yeah. Anyway, but early BlackBerries, Trios, handheld PCs, keyboards. And then we went into this, software keyboard world where, really only the BlackBerry is kind of the only thing that's still at a keyboard. Yeah, we had a few years of Android devices having keyboards, but then the iPhone changed the game. On-screen keyboards for everyone. But then what's so interesting, right, is now you're seeing a plethora of iPad keyboards and Android keyboards. And, the keyboard is, so we've sort of gone full circle. We haven't seen one for phones, but, certainly you'd look at, Logitech and some of their Bluetooth keyboards. They have a little holder for your phone. And so there is this notion, right, that no matter how good software keyboards are, you can really bang on a lot of good content on a hardware keyboard. And I love seeing that circle come back around again. Yeah, you're right. Most of them struggle with it. Yeah. Oh, do you? Well, that Logitech one I have, it's funny. So I have one for my son and I have one for myself. And it's really amazing because this has these buttons up top and you just press and it switches Bluetooth profile. And it's just like, yeah. Every keyboard should do that, right? Like, it is such a no-brainer, to do that. And I don't use it a ton, but when I do need it for my iPad Pro 11, the device I'm talking on, right, I get out that keyboard. But then it's funny too, right? I am waiting. I got an email about it today. Bridge, so the company Bridge that makes keyboards and holders. Yeah. Bridge with a Y. So the Bridge Pro Max 11 Plus, I think is the full product name, right? And it's funny, again, having a hardware keyboard and an overall aluminum shell that basically turns it into a laptop. And so we have these touchscreen devices, but again, you just can't beat a hardware keyboard and a touch trackpad. So again, we're taking these thin and light, devices and putting them in cases, giving them keyboards because we still want that functionality of, kind of our full laptop. But we now, better battery life, it's more portable and et cetera. So yeah, it is so totally Apple, right? That we're going to charge you an arm and a leg for this. And I have never purchased a hardware keyboard for any, I never purchased an Apple hardware keyboard, right? Because I just can't, the cost of it is just outrageous to me. I'm like, I don't need it that much. No, if I was someone who was using my iPad, for work, and I was traveling and I was constantly writing, I'm sure I would have. But even then, I'd almost rather go with a third party because I'm just like, Apple, I gave you my money to buy the iPad. I'm going to support some other company with the accessory. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of innovation there. And, for as much as I sometimes curse and scream at Bluetooth, because I think it's a terrible protocol, but it's all we have to work with, right? And so that the ability to use wireless devices and wireless keyboards with anything that supports Bluetooth is wonderful, right? Like if Apple had its way, there'd be an Apple wireless protocol that you can only use with an iPad. So I'm glad at least that they're open to that. Yeah. Did everything. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Well, and all that technology, right? Again, pulling it back to what we're talking about, right? You think about late 90s, I remember, right, you think about some of the early pocket PCs, the compact iPack with the sleeves, remember the sleeves? And there was a PCMCIA, people listening to this, they're going to be like, what the hell is that? Well, it's a really old ass standard, right? Yeah. And the CDPD wireless card that you plug in You know, you plug it into the sleeve, you plug it in, and then you could get your email anywhere. The blazing speed, I want to say it was 19,200 baud. I think that was the first one with the CDPD card. But that was, of course, a revolutionary, because I think before, you know, before that you were plugging in like, you know, 2,400 baud or whatever it was. So that was like high speed, and, you know, and it took it, I mean, like you said, 22 years to evolve from that add-in card to take a non-wireless product and give you the ability to be mobile and be wireless. 23 years later, you're there with your MiFi and, you know, doing everything you need to do. So again, the innovators and what Microsoft and its partners did 25 years ago, they helped build the world we're in today. And I wish more people remembered that and would acknowledge it. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at it now. Well, that is incredible. That is hardcore. Yeah. No, it was. So it looks to be some kind of like a serial port adapter, right? You're running over serial something. And yeah, you got a Sprint phone. Yeah. Incredible. Right. And just like the sheer barbarism of our early solutions, Todd, the sheer just inelegance. We didn't care. We were like, we were living the future now. We did not want to wait for this silly future. Well, I mean, you want to talk, you know, back in the day, I remember in the early 2000s, oh, it was 2001, right? When Microsoft was trying to do its pocket PC, you know, thing. So it was either the summer, I think maybe it was summer 2001. I remember, right, I did the mobile experience tour. Right, where Microsoft, and this was my first kind of big vendor contract with Microsoft. So I was a vendor, and, you know, Derek Brown had hired me. And this was the one where we went around in like an 18-wheeler truck that used to be like the WWF back when it was called that, the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. They rented this truck and it turned into this mobile theater, right? And my job was to go around to 11 or 12 different cities and just show people pocket PCs. And I remember very distinctly showing an iPad that was connected to, it was like a 6 gigabyte or 5 gigabyte hard drive, right? It was like the PCMCA adapter, and it connected to this hard drive. And I remember, you know, playing music off of it. And again, this is years before, you know, the iPod, right? And so you had this hard drive, and I was like, look, you know, I can carry around, you know, back 500 or 1,000 songs. You know, look, this device and this hard drive, I can carry 1,000 songs. But I also remember it being so hot. We were in Georgia. The iPad Pocket PC was actually overheating inside this black tent, and the hard drive was like failing because the whole device was like was getting too hot. But again, you know, that early innovation from Microsoft and its partners, you know, they brought us to where we were today. You know, somebody had to build the first, you know, portable hard drive, right? Remember that IBM made the first 1 gigabyte. The microdrive, IBM microdrive, right? It was a 1 gigabyte. Remember that? It was earth shattering, 1 gigabyte storage in a tiny, tiny, you know, hard drive. And I remember the innovation. It spinning metallic platters, right? And you think now and you're like, wait a second, you put spinning platters inside a device that you moved around? Like, that's insane. How did that even work? But it did. It was amazing. Now, to be fair, I think they had a fairly high failure rates. And if you ever dropped it, it was pretty much sayonara micro drive. But damn it, the innovation, Todd, the innovation. Yeah. Yep. Oh, what a device. What a device. Yep. 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 Absolutely. Yeah. 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 I mean, yeah, the Vadim Clio, like you want to talk about like true hardware innovation, that hinge design they had and like the approach and the aesthetic, just like top notch engineering in that device. And again, who the hell had heard of Vadim? I don't even know. I doubt they're still around. But like, who was this company? Who was Vadim that came out with this crazy device? So for anyone listening, you know, the Vadim Clio, look up the hardware, see if you can find a video of it, you know, folding. I think I still have one downstairs. Or if I don't have the Vadim Clio, yeah, I think I have. Because didn't NEC rebadge it or something, or there's some other company that rebadged the Vadim Clio. But yeah, just amazing hardware innovation, and I definitely miss some of that, you know, because right now there just isn't a lot. And I think we're on the cusp of it, like the folding screen stuff. I think we're on the cusp of having some really interesting innovation coming in the in the next few years. And in a lot of ways, right, you know, we're not those people anymore. We're not the ones driving the innovation with our wallets. It's all the people that are buying the folding phones, you know, from Samsung or Motorola, like, you know, flip phones or whatever. Those are the people that are driving the innovation. And in 5 or 10 years, whatever, this technology matures and you and I have our fit in our pocket, no compromise, fold out phone, we'll be grateful to those companies and those people that blaze the trail by going first. Yeah. Oh, scandal. Yes. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, so you're 100% right. You know, so the product managers, right, the people that were at Microsoft that were tasked with building this product, you know, were telling us that we were, you know, a tiny segment of the market. It's true. We were. But I think what they failed to recognize was that we were talking about the things that people in the coming years would expect the product to do, right? And so, yeah, absolutely. We were not with 99% of the audience. But the truth is, at that moment in time, there was no general population buying pocket PCs and Windows CE, right? The middle part of the bell curve, they were not buying these products. It was only the people, like the early adopters, that were buying it. And so rather than aggressively building out features for the early adopters to kind of secure their sort of loyalty, they were aiming, I mean, in my opinion, my completely, you know, naive opinion, never having truly been a product manager for my career, right? They were aiming for the middle of the curve that weren't even buying the devices at all. So there's definitely that misalignment, I think, with things that people want. Remember multiple calendar support? We were saying, you know, we have a personal calendar, we have a work calendar. Why can't we have both on the same device? Oh, that's ridiculous. Why would anyone ever want that? That's a power user feature. Wait a second. Don't most people have a personal life and a job? How is that a power user feature? Like, what are you talking about? But yeah, we just, it was not a battle we could ever win with them, right? Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Everybody wants to go back to their enterprise workstation and plug in a serial port and synchronize their data. That is the future, Todd. Why are you talking to us about this crazy sync over Wi-Fi with your Hotmail calendar? Who would ever want to have a cloud-based personal calendar? That's sheer idiocy. Now, to be fair, they were never harsh with us. They never said that. But, you know, that was kind of the general vibe, I think, some of the time. We could ask about these things. We'd be like, you know, no. Why would anyone ever want to do that? But again, you know, it's all about that timing with Microsoft, right? So the ideas were there by and large, but it was just timing for them. And then I think, you know, building towards the future that was coming, I think a lot of the times they just missed that. You know, they were trying to build for the future that was now, but the people that they wanted to buy their products were not the people that were lining up to buy them. There was no interest there. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Well, they followed well. And, you know, look, I mean, you know, Windows, you know, and Office, right? I mean, you know, I'm using a Mac now, but I'm still, you know, I'm paying for, well, sadly now they call it Microsoft 365, which I think is a disaster of a brand name. But, you know, Office 365 and, you know, the, you know, features in the cloud and you know, great productivity. And, you know, now I'm dating myself here as well, right? But I still enjoy using Outlook. I like having my calendar and contacts and Outlook. And, you know, in that way, I'm definitely like, I'm sort of like my dad, you know, who won't use anything but Outlook. But I genuinely still prefer Outlook. I don't like having, you know, everything in the browser. I don't use Gmail except for Google services. And I don't have my calendar in a browser. But again, I know that I am in the minority, right? The majority of people, everything's in the browser, right? The 22-year-old Jason Dunn was so vehemently anti-Apple, he would have punched me in the face and said, "You are a betrayal of all that you hold dear. How dare you use Apple products?" And I'd say, "Yo, man, I'm still using an Android phone. I haven't totally sold out." And then he'd still punch me in the face because it would be a betrayal. But I got to tell you, so, you know, again, I'm using mostly Apple products now, right? And I've like buy my iMac and my, but things Apple does, they still outrage me. My I got my daughter an iPad Air last year for Christmas. So it was like a COVID Christmas, and we were like, okay, we can't go back home to Canada. That's depressing. So let's get the kids a little something more special. So we would never normally buy something as expensive as an iPad Air. But my daughter had an old iPad mini that was just on its last legs. I think it was 5 or 6 years old. I think it was maybe the first or second generation iPad mini. So get an iPad Air. You know, again, part of the reason to get the Air was to get rid of the stupid lightning cable, right? And I was like, I want USB-C. I don't want to charge with the stupid lightning cable, right? So we got the iPad Air. Well, she takes it outside, and we tell her to be careful, but an accident happened, and she actually cracked the Touch ID glass, right, over on the power button, right? And, you know, there were some words said, like, you know, you were not careful with this, et cetera, et cetera. So I went into Apple, and I thought, well, you know what? Okay, it's probably going to be maybe $150 or $200 to repair. Like, it's going to be painful, but I want to get it repaired because, of course, without Touch ID, you can't, you know, you can't use Touch ID. So an iPad product without Touch ID, and of course, it doesn't have Face ID, is a bit of a debilitated, you know, product experience, right? Well, I take it into Apple. They tell me, and this is, I haven't yet raged about this on Twitter or blogged about it, but I think this is massively hypocritical. $416 to repair it, because you know what? They don't repair it. They sell you a new iPad Air for $416. And I sat there looking at the woman and I said, okay, look, I know this is not your policy, so my anger is not directed at you, but how can Apple be so hypocritical and talk about being ecologically friendly and not repair an otherwise perfect product and instead junk it and replace it with another product because of a tiny, like, I mean, a quarter of an inch piece of glass that is broken. And so in that way, I still, I'm channeling the Jason Dunn of, you know, 15 years ago, getting really mad at Apple for having this locked in terrible ecosystem where I have no choice but to, so, but what I did was I actually said, you know what, I'm not gonna pay for this. I'm not gonna let you do this. So my daughter is just going to use an iPad without Touch ID. So we turned it off, and now we got to put in the password like an old, you know, old monkey from 10 years ago putting in passwords or everything. But I was not going to pay Apple their $416. So there you go. There's my anti-Apple screed for the day. Well, so yeah, fascinating, right? This was the thing, right? So she tells me, you know, yeah, you know, if you had bought Apple Care, you know, it was like, what, I think it was like $69 for the year. And, you know, they have like a monthly fee. And then I actually said that to her. I said, so basically, because I didn't buy Apple Care, it's almost like an extortion, right? It's like, hey, you know, you had better buy Apple Care, because if you don't, we're not going to repair your device. We're going to tell you it's $416. And I'm like, that is mafia style gangland extortion. By not repairing these devices and making it so expensive, they're telling you, you'd better pay up, you'd better pay the monthly VIG. No, I guess the VIG is interest on a loan shark loan, whatever. You better pay the protection racket fee, because if you don't, man, when it breaks, you're going to feel like a sucker. And that's exactly how I did. And you're right, if I can go back in time, I would have paid Apple Care because this was on a product that my daughter was using. And yeah, it would have been more logical, but I think about Apple Care from the perspective of the hardware and moving parts. An iPad has no moving parts. The odds of it suffering a hardware failure are just kind of, you know, they're so small, right? You know, whatever. Do I buy it on my laptop that has a fan? You know, my older MacBook Pro, yes. Do I buy it on, you know, my iMac? Well, it's gigantic and hard to move and whatever. Yes, I'll buy it on that. But I didn't buy it on the iPad Air. And yes, in hindsight, I absolutely should have. But there's just that twist of the knife that they give you for not, you know, you didn't pay the monthly fee, so we're gonna make you feel like a moron for not paying that monthly fee. And for that, I resent them. Yes, exactly. They could have an old guy in a mobster hat saying, you know, it'd be a real shame if something happened to that beautiful new iPad. Now, to be fair, I know in the Apple checkout flow, they do have Apple Care as like an option. But again, I bought this from I'm sure I bought this from B&H, right? So I bought it from, you know, a third party. Now, you know, when you set up a new device, Apple does kind of prompt you, I think, somewhere along the way, you know, for Apple Care. But you would know the answer to this. Doesn't, so Apple Care, when you buy it, Isn't it just for like the first sort of like, you know, 2 years or something? Because you can't buy AppleCare indefinitely, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So again, but this we get. Okay. So let's just say I had bought it and it was in year three. Like iPads last forever, right? I mean, which is a good thing for, you know, for Apple, right? I'll give them full credit. You know, their hardware tends to just go and go. Exactly. And they give updates. So again, though, I buy AppleCare for 2 years, spend $150, $140 on AppleCare, and then in year three, something happens and a little, you know, crack happens. They'd still want to charge me $416 to replace it and not repair it. So I still think there's something wrong. There's something rotten with Apple's approach to ecological matters and repairing devices. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Right. She took care of it. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Well, you know, and that is one of the things that I've certainly been impressed with. Every Genius Bar experience I've had with Apple, I have been impressed. And I think that's one of those things where, you know, when you're paying for an Apple product, a big part of it, you know, and again, the me of, you know, 15 or 20 years ago would have been like, what's the big deal? You know, spending 2 hours waiting on hold for Dell to talk to someone very far away who's going to walk you through a script and you're going to spend 6 hours trying to get a repair authorized for your product. The me of now is like, no. I want to bring it in. I want someone to fix it locally. And then I want to go home, you know? So there's that, you know, classic, you know, trading money for time, you know, and that is something that no other manufacturer, you know, even on the Android side, right, with the Pixel, right? I know that if something goes wrong with my phone, I have to ship it back to Google and, like, you know, boot up an old phone and do all this song and dance. Whereas the beautiful simplicity of Apple having retail locations in so many places, you can just walk in and get your problems dealt with. And so, yeah, I, you know, for all the flack I give Apple about their hardware, you know, they make them impossible to repair yourself now. That's, you know, that's a whole other conversation. But that in-store experience, it is unparalleled, especially since Microsoft shut down their, you know, retail stores for a little while. You could buy a Microsoft Surface and have it, you know, locally, but that's all gone now, from my understanding. Exactly. It is not a panacea for sure. But for the majority of the population, it doesn't. But John lives in a tiny, you know, T-drop size of a town or whatever. But yeah, exactly. But yeah, that is weird. Actually, I thought every square footage, although, hey, Todd, we are talking about the United States, where there are, unless I'm mistaken, there are still more gun stores than there are Starbucks. So, you know, I'm sure John's small college town has a place to buy firearms, because that's a thing. But, you know, we don't want to go too off book here with our topics. It's been wonderful. I appreciate it. I'm graying, my friend. I'm trying to catch up to you. It's happening. I'm still paying a monthly fee because, again, Mr. Archivist, I don't ever want anything to go offline. So, yeah, I have a small dedicated VPS that is running my Thoughts Media websites. Because, again, there's so much great stuff that people had created, you know, just so much great. And it's a great time. And, yes, I want to remember that for as long as I live. I might even put it in my will. I'm like, you're only getting my inheritance if you keep my servers running, kids. Thank you. Let's not wait another 5 years, Todd.